And of course, Kath Cox will be on Tab Talk from 10 a.m. She'll be talking about the grand final coming up. So go to the Swifts today. Have
go
a great
Swifts.
Day.
You too, Jimmy.
Over the scene of a hot air balloon fire and crash in Texas overnight that killed 16 people. The crash happened at Lockhart, south of Austin, and officials...
I heard one pop before I stepped out the door, and then I heard another pop, and I'm looking around to see who's shooting, because it sounded like a gun going off. And then I looked off over there, and the next thing I knew, you saw a big fireball go up, and it was just praying that whoever was there got away from the thing in time.
A Melbourne man's been remanded after allegedly threatening to kill his partner with an axe. 34-year-old Ross Evans appeared before Melbourne Magistrates Court yesterday, charged with 23 offences, including making threats to kill and assaulting his on-again, off-again partner. Investigators are examining the scene of a house fire at Peakhurst in Sydney Southwest overnight. Services were called out just after 2 this morning to the reports of a fire and found the unattended house well alight. Police have established a crime scene, saying the fire appears suspicious. In Adelaide, a fire in a block of units has caused some concerns in the West Beach area. Nicole Ely reports from Metropolitan Fire Service in Adelaide.
At about 8:30 p.m. last night, 4 MFS appliances and 18 firefighters responded to multiple 000 calls reporting a well-involved unit fire on Military Road at West Beach. On arrival, MFS crews found a ground floor unit ablaze and threatening adjoining units next door and above. Damage is estimated at $100,000 and the cause is believed to be suspicious.
Still in Adelaide, and a mosque in the northeastern suburbs has been sprayed with anti-Muslim graffiti. A spokesman for the mosque, Dr. Omar Lum, has told the ABC the converted house has been used as a place of worship on Friday nights for the last 16 years, and this is the first time it's been attacked in this way. Dr. Lum says people from a number of different nationalities use the mosque as a place of prayer.
Pakistanis, as Arabs, in recent times, a few Syrians. Many of the people who come on Friday, they work in Al Mukin Hospital. They're doctors or associated with the medical services. Some come from Gawler. So actually, we've got a very diverse group of people who come here to pray on Friday.
The Federal Indigenous Affairs Minister, Nigel Scullion, has declared the issue of land rights in Australia needs fresh attention. The 40th anniversary of the Aboriginal Lands Right Act is being marked at this year's Garma Festival at Nhulunbuy in the Northern Territory. Several Indigenous leaders have described the act as being asleep. But Minister Scullion told a forum at the festival that whilst more needs to be done, the government is providing assistance to land councils.
We'll also continue to provide $110 million a year over the next 4 years to help finalise all current native title claims within this decade.
In entertainment news, author J.K. Rowling says she felt a bit strange as she attended a new play about Harry Potter, which opened on London's West End last night. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child comes nearly a decade after the final book in the series and after 8 weeks of previews.
It feels extraordinary. It feels wonderful. It's been quite a long time, obviously, since I've been to a Potter opening night or a premiere. So it's I'm having slight flashbacks, yeah.
This is Air News. AFL and Port Adelaide coach Ken Hinckley is taking a weather's life, there's hope approach to his team's slim finals hopes. The Power smashed Brisbane by 94 points last night at the Gabba to move into ninth on the ladder, but are 12 points behind North Melbourne with just 4 games to go. Despite the unlikeliness of a final spot, Hinckley says while his team's still alive, they'll be chasing a top 8 berth, starting with next weekend's trip to Sydney to play the Swans. In other matches yesterday, North Melbourne beat St Kilda, Collingwood had a win over the Eagles, Hawthorn held on over Carlton, and Richmond failed to turn up against GWS. League and the Warriors have put yesterday's 20-16 Golden Point win against Penrith at Mount Smart Stadium down to one thing, aggression. Halfback Sean Johnson's 89th minute, wonder try, capped off a period of dominance for the hosts, who also had 2 earlier opportunities to put the game to bed. Hooker Isaac Luke failed to pass to Johnson for a field goal attempt in the 83rd minute, while Johnson had a field goal charged down in the 87th minute before running over to score 2 minutes later. Skipper Ryan Hoffman said he cited their mission to ramp up the defensive pressure on Penrith. In the other games yesterday, Storm were winners over the Cowboys and West Tigers had the Eels measure. And in cricket, Sri Lanka has completed an impressive fight back to beat Australia by 106 runs in the first test in Kandy. Australian Independent Radio News.
On Sky Sports Radio, the traffic report.
Good
Morning. The M5 very heavy through the main tunnel inbound. The Cooks River Tunnel has finally cleared after an earlier breakdown, but Mastery Airport Drive and Qantas Drive are still hardly moving. In Moore Park, they've changed the road conditions for Anzac Parade between Moore Park Road and Lang Road. There's a temporary road diversion and the speed limit's been dropped to 40. It's busy over the Anzac Bridge, slow from the City West Link through Rod Point on Henley Marine Drive, and crews are finishing up works on a burst water main on Hawkesbury Valley Way in Clarendon. Don't miss final days of Oz Design Furniture's massive stock take sale extension with up to 50% off store-wide and online. Visit ozdesignfurniture.com.au. Hurry, ends tomorrow. I'm Tim Govers on Sky Sports Radio.
This is your racing leader, Sky Sports Radio.
Here comes Lucia Valentina, like a shot out of a gun. The mare races to the lead. Lucia Valentina, what a slashing win in the Queen Elizabeth.
It's time for your complete wrap of the week's feature racing around New South Wales and interstate. Welcome to the wrap.
Okay, good morning. At 9:07, it is the wrap. Kevin Wolf here this morning. Paul Joyce, unfortunately, not with us, so we've roped in. What a replacement. Andrew Bensley, what's it like voicing your own introduction? Good morning, Benz.
I was just thinking that. When I voiced that, I didn't think I'd be appearing on the show so soon. But good to be with you, Kev. Paul's having the weekend off with his family, and we wish him all the very best. But looking forward to the next hour. We've got plenty of guests coming on. It's been a great week. James McDonald, the story up in the UK, has been remarkable. He rode plenty of winners. He finished second in a Group 1 overnight. The premierships are all over, which we're going to go through, Kev. It's been another good week.
Fantastic, Benz. On the show this morning, in just a tick, we're going to catch up with Paul Denton, who is an amazing story in himself. He picked up his 8th Palmerston Sprint yesterday at Darwin. We're going to have a chat with Ty Angland also. Gary Crisp, our regular at Racing and Sports Looking. We're going to get Gary to explain how he puts his ratings together, which will be interesting. Mark Van Gestel from the Stewards. Robbie Lang with the Bletchingley yesterday afternoon. Damien Oliver, great ride, good win. Mitch Bell also. We'll put Mitch through the hoop with his, his knowledge of his own career in terms of stats. A bit of a quiz we do every week. So
I've been listening to this over the last couple of weeks, and it's really been testing a couple. Glenn Schofield knew everything about it. It'll be interesting to see how Mitch knows.
Yeah, well,
remembers.
I mean, he had a great day yesterday, didn't he? With 4 winners at Kembla to end the season on 95 wins, an up increase of nearly 30 from last year. So he's had a bumper season.
Yeah, no, he has. He's been very, very consistent, and I know you'll go through the premierships results as we go through, but I know you had him on the show last week, but Jeff Lloyd, 55 years of age, comes back from the terrible health condition that he had with a stroke a couple of years ago, and he wins the last with Sagar on there yesterday. It was a great way for him to culminate that Brisbane Jockeys Premiership.
Well, we will go through those premierships. We'll also have a look at the nominations for the New South Wales Night of Champions, the Racing Awards, and see what you think there, Benz. But let's get into the show. Paul Denton, what a jockey this man is. What a career he's had. Just like Jeff Lloyd, proving that age is no barrier to success. And he's with us on the show this morning from Darwin. Paul, good morning. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, good morning, Kevin.
Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on yesterday. 8 wins in the Palmerston Sprint. I was reading that your first win in the race was 33 years ago, 1983.
Oh, come on, Kev, you're making him sound old.
He Good P was your winner, 83, but you won it 87, 96, 97, 2005, 2011, 2015, 2016. Can you remember your first one?
Yeah, I remember it like yesterday. It was the first year I moved to Darwin. I actually moved to Alice Springs, and I moved there in January 83, and I was a... He Could Be come from Alice Springs, and I've ridden over 100 winners, but when I went to Darwin, they classed as the Metropolitan, and he had a start before the Palmerston, and he had, I think about 62, and they put me on because I could claim 3 because they classed as the Metropolitan.
Right.
And, he won that, and then they kept me on in the Palmerston Sprint, so that was my recollection of the first one.
How long have you been riding all up?
About 35 years.
Okay, so you won the Palmerston Sprint pretty early on there, but how do you look back on your career wins in so many different places and just continuing to achieve at the highest level?
Oh, I've had a good career. I mean, I started off in Adelaide, and when I first started off, I was riding 48, and the minimum was 48, and I think I was only about 2 years into my career and had a couple of injuries, and then I was flat out riding 55, so I sort of half give it away. And then a person that was riding track work for Joe Hall that I was apprenticed to mentioned Alice Springs, and I didn't even know where it is, so I thought I'd give it a try for 3 months, and I've been riding up here for 35 years.
Remarkable. Paul, take us through yesterday, the 8th Palmerston Sprint win, because you weren't really booked on Handsome Tycoon until quite late, were you?
No, it was only just over a week ago. I was actually talking to someone who said that I've won 7 Palmerstons and haven't even had a sprint ride for the whole carnival, never even looked like getting on a sprinter. And Gary Clark asked me about a week ago to ride Captain Punch because it had 54 in the Palmerston. He had 3 runners, so he put me on it last Saturday, just a week ago. And the horse won by about 8, and I was pretty wrapped to be riding him, and it was only until middle of the week, I think about Wednesday, Gary rang me again and said that Brendan had decided that, because he rides them both work and the stable jockey, he decided to ride Captain Punch, so he put me on Handsome Tycoon.
Remarkable, Brendan Davis, you talk of, who rode Captain Punch yesterday. Hey, Paul, just with yesterday, I mean, it's a big effort. We often talk about here on Sky Sports Radio about the weights that horses carry. 61.5 this horse yesterday, and there was the nearest horse was sitting on 58 and 57. Gee, he did it tough, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and he's not a very big horse. That's the first time I've sat on him, and he's only a small horse, but he's got a lot of heart, and... Well, that's the main reason Brendan Davis chose Captain Punch, because he had 55, and like everyone said, he made the wrong choice. But I told him if I had the choice at the weights, that's the horse I would have rode too. But he's just a class horse, Handsome Tycoon.
Darwin Cup tomorrow. I want to talk about your mount, but tell us about Darwin Cup time. For those people listening to us that may not have been to Darwin for the Cup at this time of the year, you just wake up and there's no cloud in the sky and it's just beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, it's terrific. It's just grown. I've been coming here since 83 and it's unbelievable how much it's grown. But people come here for the first time and you see them for the next 20 years. The weather's great. I've been away for 8 weeks, and I don't think it's been above 11 in Adelaide. So, up here, the weather's great. It's a great weekend.
What about the ball last night? Did you go along and have a bit of fun there too?
No, I wasn't at the ball. I've been to a couple of them, but no, I wasn't there last night.
Strictly for work?
Yeah, I was out, but not there.
You prefer to stay away and just do your job, Paul?
Yes, that's true.
Mate, tomorrow's Cup, you're riding a horse who's trying to make it 4 wins in a row, Al Valdivia. The win in the metric mile was enormous. It was threatened late and it really did fight hard. Can you win the Darwin Cup tomorrow?
Yeah, I think he's a very good chance. It's a hard Darwin Cup field. I think late in the night, if he turns up like he did last year, he'd be hard to beat, but he's got 63, but... My horse is in form, and I think, like any Darwin Cup winner, the horses that are in form are the ones that usually produce on the day.
Gee, he was good the other day, mate.
Yeah, he was. His other couple of wins, he's sort of led, but Big Man's got a bit more pace, so he showed that he can sit off him, and he sort of had me under pressure on the home turn, but he did show that I reckon he'll run the 2,000 because he kept grinding away, and when the other horse came at him, he found plenty.
One sad memory, of course, of Darwin Cup Day was last year with the loss of Simone Montgomery. There's been a big cycling thing, Paul. They took off from Streaky Bay in South Australia and they got to Darwin yesterday morning, and they've raised a great amount of money for the National Jockeys Trust. And I know Michelle Payne took part in the last 5 kilometres of the ride. It will be a fairly emotional day tomorrow when they all come together.
Yes, it is. It's been like that the last couple of years. I wear Simone's ribbon on my helmet. I'll never forget it. I was actually in that race. So it's sad. It's one of probably the saddest day of my life. Well, Bale and Caitlin Forrest lost their life as well. But, yeah, they've done a great job that to cycle. I actually was there on the Friday when they arrived, and, yeah, there was a lot of people that had tears in their eyes, and they've done a great job.
Well, they've raised $200,000, is the figure I read, which is extraordinary.
Yeah. I think they've raised more than that.
More. Yeah.
It's going to be announced tomorrow. No, look, well done to them all. And it was driven by Simone's father, Peter, who was a trainer and isn't in the game now, but he certainly drove this. And congratulations to them all and everyone that took part in riding Kev from Streaky Bay in South Australia to Darwin. It's an extraordinary performance.
It is indeed. Paul, look, thanks for that. Tomorrow you've got the Darwin Cup ride. You've also got Adjuster, I believe, in race 7.
Yes.
Yeah. What are your chances there?
I think he'll go very well. He ran in the Chief Minister's Cup and ran fifth and probably just needed a run over the mile. So with that run under his belt, I think he's an excellent chance as well.
All right. And you'll be backing up next year for the Palmerston Sprint again?
Yep, hopefully.
All right. Well done, Paul. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And good luck tomorrow. All right, Paul Denton there, and the Darwin Cup tomorrow. It is a big weekend, Benz. Have you been to a few?
Yes. No, I haven't been for a number of years, but it is a magnificent time of the year. The temperatures, we had a bit of fun with Glenn Munsey yesterday because he's up there, obviously, and he came on the radio and he said the pool was even warmer than what Sydney had the first thing yesterday. Yeah. I think it was about 9 degrees. It's just 30 degrees plus. It's just clear. There's no humidity. It's just a beautiful time of the year to be in the top end.
Yeah, the dry season's to go because you can plan music festivals up there with absolutely no chance of it being washed out.
Well, the ball is staged in the open air, Kev, because they know it's not going to rain. It's quite extraordinary.
All righty. Well, that'll be a great day. And you'll hear all the action, of course, tomorrow from Darwin Cup Day right here on Sky Sports Radio. Now, it's 17 past 9. We are doing the wrap. We should have a look at what happened in Sydney yesterday, Ben. Mm. Ruling Dynasty. We had James Cummings on the show last week, and he talked us into how Ruling Dynasty might perform. Here's a bit of what he had to say yesterday, or last week, in fact, about Ruling Dynasty.
Yeah, he's going to run first up next Saturday in the Winter Challenge 1500. Good to see that put prize money up in the race, so... the owners can hopefully get a little bit of that, but he's going to need further. He's telling me that he'll be more second, third up, you know, once he gets out of the middle distance. But he's looking really well. He kept battling to the line in a barrier trial there last week, and he should be forward enough to start, forward enough to show something in the early part of his preparation without getting too carried away. He's truly a mile and a half horse.
Well, there you go. It was a pretty good run, wasn't it? Probably the run of the day or one of them.
Yeah, certainly was. Marin Ostro had that perfect sit outside the leader, and we'll talk to Ty England in a moment. But Ruling Dynasty, first up, as you've just heard from James, a 2,400-metre horse. And by gee, didn't he lift the last sort of 80 metres or so when Glenn Schofield really urged him to get into third money, Kev?
Yeah, it was probably one of the better runs of the day, and it paid $7 the place, so well done if you picked up a piece of that. Other highlights yesterday before we speak to Ty, Interstellar was pretty impressive. Benz?
Yeah, first run for Hawks Racing, come over from New Zealand. Tommy Berry was on yesterday morning on our show and gave it a good push, and I know that they expect a good set of improvement for Interstellar going forward. I thought Rock on Czar is in that race, a really honest type for Barb Joseph, and Paul Jones is probably one that we'll be able to follow. And of course, we can't ignore that the New South Wales record rewritten again by trainer Chris Wather, an amazing trainer, an amazing team. I know it's a full team effort there, but Chris is in charge of it all. And, he spoke so proudly of everyone there after clinching that yesterday afternoon. And like Darren Weir in Victoria, they just keep going. We know that they've got large teams, but they consistently train winners. Not every Saturday, Kev, but basically every day that they have runners, they train winners.
Yeah, it's an amazing operation. And he finished the season the way he started. With a bang, with a treble yesterday. But our next guest, he rode too, and let's intro him like this, shall we? Yeah, it's Benz's favourite song.
it, Kev? It's a bit of disco music or something, is it?
Well, what is it? Let's ask Ty Anglin what it is. Ty, good morning. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Yourself?
I'm well. What's the song, mate?
Oh, that's my daughter's favourite song.
Uptown Funk.
Yeah, I get punished with that song about 90 times a day in the car.
So it's not Postman Pat, it's that song, is it?
Yes, it is Uptown Funk and she loves it.
All right, well, you don't need to hear it again this morning, do you? But read about that, that you're very keen on the song.
He's so glad you played it again, Kev.
Yeah, you just can't hear it enough. Hey, where does the nickname Rooster come from? Are you there?
Oh,
putting him back on hold. Here we go. Are you there, Ty? Sorry about that. Pit the wrong button. Yeah. Where does the nickname Rooster come from?
Grant Buckley actually nicknamed me Rooster.
Why?
Because, obviously, when I was a little fella chasing my wife, he reckons every time I used to see her, I'd stand on the fence and crow like a rooster.
No, well, that's all right. Wagga this year. I got some beautiful photos with you and the kids. They're young and you've got to enjoy them, Ty. And they obviously, I know Wagga is a good place for you, but they normally, when I out at Scone earlier this year, they normally go with you when you do right away.
Yeah, I like to, you know, we make it a little break. The country carnivals aren't too far away, so we went out and stayed at Scone there for two or three nights. And, listen, Lexi, she's a bit older now. She loves going to the races and she's a very out there going girl and she gets along with everyone. And, yeah, we make a good little break of it. And, yeah, Addie's turn one now, so she's up and about. So, yeah, they're beautiful little girls, that's for sure.
Ty, before we talk about yesterday, I was speaking with Paul Joyce yesterday, who used to be your manager, and you had a few Group 1s with Paul. He was suggesting we should ask you about your form as being a rodeo rider. Tell us your history there.
As a child growing up, my dad was into rodeos and my brothers still ride at the moment. So, yeah, it was just, you know, that was what we grew up in, horse events and gymkhanas. And, yeah, we followed the rodeos as a young child. And then when I got to about 14, 15... Yeah, 15, I moved up to Sydney and, yeah, started my apprenticeship. But my brothers had competed in America and, yeah, they went really hard at it there for about 10 years. And as you get a little bit older, they've found themselves a good work. And, they're starting to slow down on the rodeo side. They do it for a bit of fun every now and then.
So being a rodeo rider, does it help when you're, in terms of your preparation for getting on the back of a racehorse?
Oh, I think just balance, etc. Obviously, I rode horses a lot as a child and sort of went into the rodeos. And, yeah, probably one thing moving forward from the rodeos to racing would probably just be the balance of, you know, being on top.
As Kevin mentioned, you rode a double there yesterday. That first win, a Golden Organic for Anthony Cummings. There was much discussion yesterday. Anthony feels maybe he can get sort of 2,000 metres. You think that he may get a mile? I guess we'd leave it up to the horse in the future?
Yeah, I only said a mile just because the size of him at the moment, there's not much of him at all. I thought it was a very, very tough effort for him. He had to, you know, he's only third up. He's gone straight up to 1,500, sat outside the leader and had to take the field. Up to him. So, yeah, I thought it was a really good effort for the size of the horse and what he's done.
Yeah, I guess with time, you never know that. I mean, and they've got to take it, haven't they? They've got to make the step from a 2 to a 3-year-old and grow up.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. You know, hopefully when he has a spell that he can just fill out and strengthen up a bit.
Marin Ostro was one of the Chris Waller winners there yesterday. You just got that perfect run. The horse jumped so well.
Yeah. He really deserves that stakes win, that horse. He's such a gallant horse that tries his heart out every time. And, you know, horses like this help Chris win premierships. He's so consistent. He can get 3 or 4 wins a prep and, you know, they all add up. So for him to win that stakes race, it was a solid effort and he thoroughly deserved it.
Could you sense that Ruling Dynasty was sort of lunging at you laid out wide? I know Oxford Poet fought on bravely to your inside to run second, but they were coming at you late, weren't they?
They were. I knew Oxford Poet was one of the main horses to beat, and he was going to be up on the speed, setting the pace. So when I began so well, I just wanted to make him use that little bit to cross me, because I knew that he would be vulnerable late. And tempo was nice to suit us, I thought. And then I sort of put pressure on Tim a little bit early, just hoping that my horse was a bit stronger, than quicker and smarter than, you know, the horses behind us. And I knew they'll be running us down late, but hopefully we just had an easy enough time up in front.
So, Ty,
that's how it worked.
Okay. How do you look back on your year? Happy with it?
I am happy with it, but I know I can do better. It's been a very, for me, momentum's been very up and down. It hasn't, sort of last season was a lot better. But then I look at, you know, I think I only rode 4 more winners last year than what I did this year. So overall, I'm pretty happy, but I know I can step it up a bit more and try and crack that 100 next year.
Okay, and what are you looking forward to in spring?
I haven't got much lined up in spring, to tell you the truth. I'm sort of in my position. I just sort of pick a few things up late. You know, horses that clash where riders can't ride, you know, they're standard riders. So just put my face out there and be there to pick up those sort of horses.
Okay. Do you take a bit of time off now, or you?
No, I won't take any time off. I sort of want to continue through, hopefully, you know, keep this momentum up and work it on into the spring.
Okay, well, look, before we let you go, just tell us how you're going to fill in your spare time. Obviously, your family's so important to you. Is that how you spend most of your downtime, with the wife, kids, that type of thing?
Yeah, if I'm not racing, it's with them for sure.
All right.
So, yeah, they're a big part of my life now, and, yeah, my little girls are obsessed with me. So whenever I get time with them, yeah, it's best thing ever.
Right. And, Ty, you're off to Melbourne next week on a horse that could take you into the early part of the Grafton Cup winner, Smart Volatility.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him winning the morning, but I thought his trial was very smart the other day. I know, you know, all them big line horses were well underdone and only having a soft trial, but I just was really impressed how he jumped in the bridle and was just there, ready to go, and I didn't ask him to do much, and he felt great. So down the straight, Flemington next week, so really looking forward to it.
All right. Ty, thank you for joining us this morning on The Wrap. We wish you well. Enjoy your day with your family, and we appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, Ty Anglund, here on The Wrap. And in just a moment, we'll have a chat with Mark Van Gestel. Also still to come, Gary Crisp, looking at how he puts his form together for racing and sports. Robbie Lang with the Bletchingley yesterday. What do you know about Bletchingley as the horse, Benz?
I'm going to be very honest and say not a lot.
Well, Bletchingley,
sounds like you know.
Well, really,
come on, Kev.
Yeah, look, he's an extraordinary animal. When he was very young, the owners thought that he was a little bit too small and unsound to be a good racehorse, and wouldn't have much of a career, and only had the 5 starts, 4 wins and a second, and then went straight to stud. 1975, far part of his first crop, Kingston Town came out in 1975. Yeah. So he sired something like 61 Group 1 winners of 174 group races, was the champion sire 80, 81, 82. An amazing record, which is flowing on into the studs of today, because his granddaughter was the dam of Redoute's Choice. So nothing wrong with the blood of Bletchingley.
Yeah, the bloodlines, they can flow through, and he's certainly listening to some of those stats, and obviously with Kingston Town linked to it and so many other horses, he was a special horse, and that's why the Melbourne Racing Club have made that race in honour of him. I hope we can get Robbie, because sometimes... ooh, he answers, sometimes he doesn't. So it'll be interesting. I hope he does answer for our sake.
All righty. Well, we'll see. That's still to come. But right now, let's have a chat with Mark Van Gestel, Chief Steward of Racing New South Wales. Mark, good morning.
Morning, Kevin. How are you?
I'm well. And what's the wash-up of yesterday? Was it a busy day for the Chief Steward?
No, we had a pretty good day, actually. There was no suspensions of any of the riders, or a couple of
fines that we handed out for some whip use, but other than that, it was a pretty tame day in the stewards room, Kevin.
The disappointing one was Tales of Grimm out of the feature race.
Yeah, it was terribly disappointing. Andrew, as you say, he broke down to about the 600 metre mark and unfortunately couldn't be saved. So we go through the process now, Andrew, of having obviously a necropsy report completed on the horse and go through the treatment and veterinary records for the horse, and we'll make a finding over the next few weeks in respect to what actually went wrong with Tales of Grimm at the 600 metre mark.
Yeah, I know that, you know, it just affects, they become part of families, Kev, and Mark knows this as well, but, you know, strappers and things deal with these horses on a daily basis, and for a horse to go to the races and then not go home, Mark, it becomes very, very emotional, and that was the case with the whole Wallace stable there yesterday.
No, that's right, but as you say, Andrew, they become part of the family, and it's quite often I've said is, you know, the horses themselves are looked after better than some other stable land sometimes. The environments they live in, they're cared for, get the best feed and nutrients, and it's very upsetting when things like this occur on race day.
Did any of the runs yesterday surprise the stewards?
No, probably nothing that surprised. We did speak to the winner of the last race, Magna Joy. It won at odds of about 30-1, and the horse performed poorly at its last start, and interestingly, the trainer, Jared Austin, said it was sent out to a spelling farm for a week or so, just had a freshen up and was back in his stable for a week, and that obviously was enough to turn it around, and it was able to take up a forward position and go on and win the race. So I guess, you know, there's different methods in which people train horses, and that's just another example of horses being given a chance to freshen up, leave the stable environment, and then come back in for a week or so, and they can still perform at the top level.
Mark, the wrap, we look back at the week's racing, and you had a major appeal hearing during the week involving Blake Shin and his ride on Thud going back to June. It got great discussion at that stage when he was given the month. Blake won that, and he'll be back riding on Wednesday. From a steward's point of view, you obviously felt at the time that it required a suspension.
Oh, look, we went through and critiqued the ride as we do with all rides, and the stewards, when we viewed that ride, thought that there was four errors that Blake had made during the running of the race, and we thought those errors were culpable, and that's the reason why we issued the charge and the one-month suspension. The appeals panel, I think it's been reported, was a six-hour hearing that took a significant period of time. There was a lot of evidence that was presented. Stewards giving evidence, obviously Blake Shin giving evidence. They also called expert evidence from Greg Childs. And in the end, the Race in New South Wales appeals panel found that the errors that he made weren't culpable. What they found that he did make an error in the race, they felt that the error that he made wasn't a culpable error, and as such wasn't captured by the rule. So, look, that's the decision of the appeals panel, and we respect that decision, and yeah, we move forward and we'll continue to sort of look at rides, and if we think that it's necessary for charges to be issued, you know, that's the process we'll take.
Yep, understand.
Okay. Mark, thank you. We won't mention Parramatta for a change, and we'll leave it there.
Yeah, no, let's not mention it, Kevin.
Oh, then. Works every week. Thank you for your time, mate.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
Mark Van Gestel, the wrap here with Kevin Wolfe, Andrew Bensley, 27-10.
How are we going, Kev? Are we going all right?
Well, you're the boss, you tell me.
No, well, I'm a bit nervous. I'm just rolling with the punches. I'm just hoping that I, you know, maybe back next week, but oh, who knows?
Well, we'll chat about it afterwards and go through your performance, okay? Thank you, mate. 27-10, back in just a moment with Gary Crisp, Racing at Sports.
Sky Sports Radio is out to give you every magical moment in racing. And when August arrives, spring is not far behind.
Japanisma forging to a narrow lead. Japanisma takes out the San Domenico.
Races like the San Domenico, Warwick Stakes, and the build-up to the Golden Rose will set Sydney racetracks alive. Every day, programs like Racing HQ, Tab Talk, Punters Postmortem, and The Wrap on Sunday mornings brings you the right mail. The new thoroughbred racing season on your racing leader, Sky Sports Radio.
Sluts and I have done it, now it's your turn. That's right, book now for the International Race Week in Hong Kong. Leaving December 6th, all the details are looked after by Ambassador Travel.
It's first class all the way. away.
Private corporate boxes at Happy Valley on Wednesday night, and also for International Day at Sha Tin on Sunday. Hopefully with Chautauqua to conquer the world again in the spring. There's tours galore, including Macau. Or venture up to Mission Hills for some golf. In between, grab all the bargains and knock over the Christmas shopping. You can also extend to mainland China.
Call Ambassador Travel now. 1-800-777-989.
Or log on to ambassadortravel.com.au.
On Sky Sports Radio, you're listening to The Wrap.
It's amazing how Andrew Bensley can voice that and put the music behind it at the same time. It's a talent.
Well, I've since found out that Bruno Mars is the singer of that song that you played for Ty England. How about that?
Yeah, look, you're all over it, Benz. You are all over it.
We might have to bring a music show into Sky Sports Radio and I can just sit there and really be a part of it.
Yeah, we won't be hosting it. If that's the case. let's chat with Gary Crisp, Benz, from Racing and Sports. Gary, good morning.
G'day, Kevin. How are you? Andrew?
Yeah, thank you. Mate, we're well. Before we get into how you come up with your form ratings, which I reckon is pretty interesting, tell us what your thoughts were after the running of the two features yesterday, the Bletchingley and, of course, the winter in Rose Hill.
Yeah, look, I thought the Bletchingley first. Obviously, it's one of the major lead-in races, sort of the end of the current season, early next season, and this renewal was pretty much on par. Lord of the Sky has raced in this race the last 3 years now, and he got the victory yesterday, and he's run to a time form running for 112, which in terms of the history of the race sits pretty much in the five-year winning average is about that value, about 112. That's where the race sort of sits. And as far as Lord of the Sky goes, that's sort of his second-tier rating. He's a handy sprinter. He's been second in a Goodwood. He's been fourth in a Newmarket behind Brazen Bow, and, of course, second in the TJ behind Chautauqua, where he ran a figure of 121, which is way out of his comfort zone, and we just put that down to an aberration. Essentially, he's pretty much 112 horse, and he's won all his six races at Caulfield, but he was considerably advantaged yesterday by the way the race was run, the slow tempo. So
Damien Oliver, Gary, was just able to dictate. If you look at the sectionals, no doubt you would have. He's just brought them beautifully into the race. No wonder the others couldn't catch him in the end.
Yeah, that's right, Andrew. On our past sectional analysis, it shows that he was the only horse in the race to run pretty much to those pars, which is why he was able to dominate, and they couldn't actually catch him in the end. So it was a very heavy ride by Oliver, which is what you expect from a rider of his class.
Hey, Gary, can I ask you about another one? I'm going to put you on the spot here from Caulfield. I love the win of Darren, who was named after Darren Hinch. It's
by Hinchinbrook.
By Hinchinbrook, exactly. Yeah. Have you had a look at Darren from yesterday yet?
We have. Horses like that, obviously, lightly raced horses, sometimes are very difficult to get a guide on. Yeah. And particularly the way that race was run, a horse coming from well back in the field. Visually, it was very impressive. And, we've got a figure on him of 104, which is quite a high number for a horse having a second race start. So, obviously he's lightly raced and you're expecting to improve off that again. So it was quite an impressive performance.
Yeah, they're talking about Caulfield Guineas and things like that, so we'll wait and see what Hayes and Dabernick can do there. What about the Winter Challenge in Sydney?
Yeah, again, pretty much to script in terms of historical analysis. Andrew, the Marinosco horse we know pretty well, has got a pretty defined form and ratings profile, and he's run to a figure of 108 yesterday, and if we look at the five-year winning average of the race, that's about where it sits. Previous winners like Coupe T, He's Your Man, when he was working his way through the grades, ran slightly higher numbers, 109, but that's where the race sits. Again, it's a sort of one of those it's about a listed category, which is where the number sits. The tempo of that race actually brought quite a few runners undone. I just want to highlight one there, which was Sacred Master, and our Himalaya Dream was at disadvantage as well, but Sacred Master, the stayer that Chris Wallace got from New Zealand. If we looked at our past sectional standards for the race and compare where Sacred Master might have finished with a stronger tempo, he's run a figure there that if he improves to that this next couple of runs, he's going to win races here for sure. well.
So, Gary, when you talk about, you said Mare Nostro, their rating of 108, and you gave Lord of the Sky 112. What does that figure mean? How do you come up with it?
It's a figure in pounds, and basically all the time form ratings are of equal merit. So, for example, Madeira, an example, 104, if as a two-year-old, if the five-year-old had run a figure of 104, that's equal merit. So it's able, you're able to compare horses across races and across continents as we do with time form. It's been around since 1948. And basically in that time, we look after here in Australia, we look after Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, most of Asia. And the boys up in the Northern Hemisphere handle pretty much the rest. And then we get a chance to standardise values when horses travel throughout the year, when they travel to Dubai, for example, Hong Kong, and also down here for you know, our races, and when our horses travel up to the UK and Europe. So we're able to get a very good guide, because racing's become very much a global sport these days. But in developing time form rating, it's really two parts to it. One is the first part, the race result itself, which we know quite a lot of information about, and we sort of, that's the first step in the process. Once we've got a race result, we know the distance of the race, the time it takes to run it, the surface it's run on, for example, the weight each horse carries, their age, and the margin separating them. So what we do from that is to calculate a poundage allowance, which is based on the distance of the race and the time that race takes. So, for example, a short distance race, a sprint race, you might have a poundage allowance of something like 4 to 5 pounds equals a length. In a race like the Melbourne Cup, you're out to probably a pound and a half per length, that sort of thing. So once we've determined that, we're then able to put a figure on every one of those horses, and also the horses racing on dirt or synthetic. There's a different pounding allowance again, but having said all that, we end up with what we know about the race. The trick then is to take that race with those ratings for each one of those runners and to put it into context of a universal handicap, which is not against, which is assessing that race against all races that have been run and against all races that will ever be run. So that is the very tricky bit, is where you position that race and therefore the merit of each one of the horses that raced in that race. So once we do that, we've got quite a few factors to look at that. Before the race, we always run an algorithm which tells us pretty much what the race standard's going to be. And then we apply that standard immediately after the race against the theoretical difference in weights that we've calculated already from the actual result itself. We've got 5-year historical analysis. You hear me talk about 5-year historical analysis for every group and listed race that's run, and that gives us a pretty good guide as to what the outcome should be, what the rating should be for that race. So, and then the individual handicapper makes a final judgment on that. So along the way, there's checks and balances that gets us to a point where the computer says this is what the value should be for this race and this is where it should sit. And most times the computer gets it pretty close. So, and then once that process is done, every rating is calculated again for each one of those horses, and that's a run-specific rating.
Okay.
What we also have is a master rating for every horse.
So in your time then, what horse has recorded the highest rating and why was it so high?
Well, the highest rating horse is Frankel, and I was fortunate enough to see him race a few times, 147.
Right.
To give you an idea, a normal Group 1 horse will run around 125, Group 2, 120, and Group 3, 115. So, and prior to him was Seabird, but the performance that earned Frankel that run was in the Queen Anne Stakes, where he just decimated the field by 11 lengths, and the form out of that race subsequently was enormous. Like it was just an amazing performance. And of course, their own Black Caviar, 136, is the equal highest rated filly or mare in the history of time form, with LA France and a baby. So we do have quite a lot of good horses here over a period of time, but not as many as they do in the Northern Hemisphere.
Oh, got all that, Benz? I'll be testing you on that.
I'm just going to take a breath. It sounds complicated, Gary, but when you're doing it all the time and setting these marks, it obviously is something that you walk into and you go, you're able to go bang, bang, bang and do it in, quicker than the way you answered it.
Yeah, exactly. It does sound complicated, but
yeah.
And when I teach the young guys in the office, it's sort of a 5 or 10 year apprenticeship for these yeah. young guys in the office. But when you, I say to them, you get wired, you know what the race, where it sits pretty much yep. from experience.
Yeah.
And yes, it is. And it's a fascinating part of the game, really. We see horses as numbers and other people see them as, you know, bone and muscle. So it's a different way of looking at them.
Yeah.
Good on you, Gary. Thank you for that. We appreciate your explaining it for us, and we'll have a better understanding next time we see you rate something at 112. We'll go, ah, now we know.
I hope I haven't confused everybody.
We appreciate it, Gary. Thanks for that. We'll speak to you next week.
Good on you, Kevin.
See Gary you. Crisp on Racing and Sports.
Don't worry about asking me. I want you to summarise it as well.
Didn't you just listen to what Gary was saying, Benz?
Yeah,
easy.
I did, but I want you to say it.
Shortly. We've got to do this first.
Market Movers, Racing HQ, Tab Talk. It's all on Sky Sports Radio.
Yes, indeed. Let's get on with the horse racing. And Robbie Lang got his training licence in 1980. He's had Group 1 winners, the class of Polanski, Roman Arch, Pantani, Perfect Bliss. And yesterday, Lord of the Sky winning the Bletchingly. And Robbie's with us. Robbie, good morning to you.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Yeah, we're well. Congratulations on the win. How did you rate it?
Yeah, it was good getting back. It's been almost 2 years or about 2 years since he's won a race, but he hasn't totally been out of form in that period of time, you know, with his second beating an inch in the TJ Smith, second in the Goodwood at Group 1 level, carrying top weight, beaten by Flamberge, fourth in the Newmarket Handicap, the Brazen Bow, second in the Standish, the Christmas Handicap. So he went for a period of time where he was a four-year-old and he took a little while to adjust, especially over the summer months of carrying top weight. You know, 59 and 60 was heavy, hard work for him. But, he did his tendon in the Bletchingly last year, and we thought it was probably the end of the road. But, there have been several people involved in his rehab, and still looks a bit ugly, but was assured by the vets after several scans that he'd be good to go on with, and a trial back in May was simply outstanding. He jumped and was quickly 6 lengths in front, won by 8, ran 1.5 seconds quicker than any other trial, which is no surprise when Lord of the Sky is on song. So we give him a little bit of a breather after that, happy enough that he still had it. And his run first up when he was a bit underdone was good, and yesterday, you know, he just was too quick for them.
Oh, gee, he was rated beautifully by Ollie, Robbie.
Yeah, look, the Lord of the Sky of old used to go out and his sectionals were always around about 10-7, 10-8, you know, every furlong. Didn't leave him with a lot left up his sleeve. And he'd been on some of those occasions, but yesterday I was watching the up in the corner of the screen and it was 11-3, 11-3, 11-3. And, you know, that's quicker than a lot of horses can run. And when he put a few lengths on them around the corner, instead of them coming to the corner comfortable and on the bit, they were chasing before the turn. It just softens them up, and that's why he's able to run away with it.
Now, is it true that there's a chance that we might have to learn another language with Lord of the Sky?
I don't think I'll be going. If he's sold, I won't be going over there. But
okay, so just for our listeners, there is a chance that the horse could end up in France?
Yeah, that's right. Well, they've taken some people from overseas to recognise his speed. A couple of leading stud masters from over there, one's from England, one's from France. They've identified him as probably the quickest stallion in Australia. And they've got some heritage handicap in England in September, one or two. 1,000 metres, they're of £150,000. And there's a sprint race. They tell me it equates to about a Group 3 Australian sprint. It's worth £350,000 on Arc Day, Arc de Triomphe Day. And that would be his last start. Some good judges have told me that it is quite a winnable race with a fast Aussie sprinter. And then he would find his way to a stud in Europe in January or February of next year.
Where does he rate in terms of horses you've trained?
Oh, he's very quick. And I think his father was very quick, but the thing against Dane Rich was he'd come home from the races or after he'd have a gallop, he'd run his yard. He was very unsettled, very temperamental horse. This horse was an absolute gentleman. It was funny, because of his racing style,
where he sometimes, you know, used to race out of control, and being a very quick horse, when I sent him down to Monomyth Stud to Bridget Plinch, she goes, oh, I don't know about bringing that horse down here. I said, why is that? She goes, oh, he's a lunatic, isn't he? I said, nah. Anyway, after a month or so down there, she said, oh, can't believe what a gentleman he is. She said, he's the quietest stallion I've had on the property.
Okay.
So that sort of makes him probably a more rounded horse than any sire, Dainrich, who, you know, the question was, have the quickest horses. Back when I was training sprinters in the 90s, Mr. Cube was very quick. He broke the course record at Flemington over 1,100 on two separate occasions. And, yeah, I trained Corbeau for a while when Dad was on holidays. He was very quick, one of William Reid. He was right up there with Manicato on several occasions. But, no, he's brilliantly quick.
Okay. Before we let you go, Robbie, today you got a couple at Pakenham, Black Envy and Cinnamon Carter. What are your thoughts there?
Well, Black Envy's probably 25-1. Hit the line good there earlier in the week, over 1,400. Up to the mile, he's a place chance at good odds. And Cinnamon Carter, only bad luck will beat her. She's outstanding on the synthetic. She's outstanding there at 2,200. Only won by a length and a half last start, but that was when she was shunted right down. She was going to win by five, and it was the same horses. So I think she's as good, if not better, in condition. Barrier one, if she gets tucked away and can't get out, that's the only way they'll beat her.
Okay.
And what are you going to do with yesterday's winner, Lord of the Sky? What's next?
Well, I'm just going to put my head down and head towards the, well, it used to be the Liston in a fortnight, over 1,400.
Yep.
Love to try him over 1,400. That's his favourite track. It's funny, I went through his form last night. You know, he's referred to as the maligned Lord of the Sky. He's at 24 starts. He's finished in the first four on 18 occasions of the 24 starts, so he's not far off being a really consistent racer.
I reckon he was maligned early because, you know, as you mentioned earlier, he used to be a horse that just jumped and run and they were able to catch him, but he's a different horse now, as you've well explained this morning, Robbie.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he probably, you know, to be realistic about it, he looked like being the best sprinter in the lane, and anything less than that disappointed a lot of his followers. I can remember Vince Accardi had huge raps on him because his sectionals were so far above average. That was after he'd had his sort of third, fourth start in the race. But, you know, he's won over $1 million now, so we're fairly happy with him.
He certainly paid his way, plus you also have a share in him, so you'd be laughing now.
That's right, I bred him, actually.
Well, there you go. Good on you, Robbie. Thank you for joining us this morning, and good luck with Lord of the Sky. Well done.
No worries, thanks.
Robbie Lang here on the Wrap at 8 to 10. And we're joined now by what a day he had yesterday, Mitch Bell. Mitch, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Martin, very well. Well done yesterday, mate. Four at Kembla. Have you had a day out like that before?
Yeah, I have. I rode five winners at Newcastle probably close to 10 years ago. So I'm trying to better that, but it was still a good day yesterday.
Well, it brings you to 95 wins for the season, up from, I think, 67 last year. So you'd have to be pretty happy how you've performed for the past 12 months.
Yeah, definitely. That was our goal this year, to try and crack the 100. I haven't done it yet, so... me and my manager have been trying to do that for the last couple of years. Unfortunately, I had a setback last season. But this season has been really good to us. And, yeah, we got close, but we didn't quite crack the 100. But hopefully next season we can do it.
Mitch, look, you were linked with Art Lee, of course, who won the country championship final. You've been a very consistent performer, as you've just mentioned. But on a day like yesterday, when you're riding, you know, winner after winner, there was a gap of a race between a couple of them. But the confidence when you're riding must just bolster through the day.
Yeah, it does. You know, like... the further you go on, the more confidence you give yourself, and when you got that, you just make the right decisions. You know, you let your horse do the work for you, but you just seem to put him in the right place, and just everything works out perfect. And you know, it's always good to have that confidence. And you know, it's it helps having the quality underneath you too. You know, I've always had good support off good trainers down those areas, and that helps.
All right. And what about are you having a break now before spring, or are you continuing, having any sort of time off?
Well, look, I just had a fortnight suspension before last week. But I'd actually booked a Fiji holiday probably about 3 months ago, and I was trying to get it pushed forward while I was off, but there was no accommodation left over. So me and my family are going to go to Fiji tomorrow, and we'll be there for a week, and
beautiful.
I'll be straight back into it a week after. So
you don't need a watch there. F1J1, Fiji time.
That's it.
Now, you should be nervous, Mitch, because Kevin asks a jockey each Sunday on the wrap some questions about his jockey life. So if you're going to get nervous, it's time to get nervous right now.
Yeah, it's high pressure, Mitch. Here we go. Since 2006, 2007, how many winners have you ridden, do you think?
You got me. I've got no idea.
Well, what do you think? It's 200, 400, 500? Anything?
No, I got nothing.
499. So you're close to 500. There you go. What track have you ridden most winners on?
You got me again.
Oh, come on.
Have a guess. Have a guess, Mitch.
I'd have to say Kembla.
Correct. 166 after yesterday, followed by Newcastle 109, Muswellbrook 57, Scone 49, Hawkesbury 48, Corindai 3. How many do you think you've had at Orange?
I'd have to say 4?
No. One.
One?
One. What about in the ACT? How many wins down in Canberra?
I'd go for about 22.
No. 13. What horse has given you the most success?
Is that in money?
Or? No, in terms of wins, number of wins on board.
Okay. You got me there. I've got nothing.
Military Secret?
Military Secret, yeah.
And Go-Go Apollo, 5 each. Yeah. And who's been the most successful trainer in terms of you riding wins for them? Come on, you've got to get one right.
I'd have to say Paul Massaro.
All right. Outstanding. Nicely
done.
He got
two right. He got two right. He got Kembla.
That was a bit harsh. Kembla. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Good on you, Mitch. You passed. Well, not really. he had a crack anyway.
Well, he passed during the week because he rode 4 yesterday. He was on Mercurian on Wednesday. Mitch, you're riding really well, mate. Have a good break in Fiji, eh?
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Good on you, Mitch. Mitch Bell joining us here on The Wrap. And we'll get to Trent Langscale shortly. With
the premierships.
With where the money went. But, yeah, let's have a look at the premierships and how they ended up yesterday after, the Metro ones in particular. In fact, before we do the premierships, Benz, the New South Wales Night of Champions Awards coming up August 18. Two-year-old of the year, nominees, Capitalist Prize Icon Yankee Rose. Pretty simple, you'd suggest.
Yeah, Capitalist would be winning that, you would think.
Three-year-old of the year, Holler Japanisma Press Statement.
Going to sit on the fence.
Okay. Sprinter, Chautauqua Fell Swoop Holler.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty easy. Myler, Ascadelia Kermadec, or Winx. Next. Middle distance, Lucia Valentina, Preferment, the United States.
Winx was there, wasn't it?
No, it was only the three, Lucia, Preferment and the United States.
Yeah, Lucia would be winning that, you would think. But I will say with these awards that they're done on a point system rather than people voting for them.
Yep.
And in recent years, the odd result has come up. So I'm not saying that they're straightforward. They appear straightforward, but they are a point system rather than a voting one.
The Stayer of the Year, Galante Libren, Who Shot the Barman?
Yeah, Chris Waller will win that.
Okay, Queen of the Autumn, Ascadelia Peeping or Single Gaze?
Single Gaze.
Okay, New South Wales Country Champion Horse of the Year, Big Money Fell Swoop, Single Gaze?
I'll go single again.
And Provincial Champion Horse of the Year, Leromaine, Lucia Valentina, Mighty Lucky.
Yeah, Lucia.
Okay, other awards include the Champion Sydney Trainer, Jockey, The Bart Cummings medal, Hugh Bowman won the first, and then Nash Rewilla, Chris Waller's won it for the last four in a row. And this year they're also the Sydney Strapper of the Year. There's a list of nominees, and they're going to be rewarded also for their efforts in the stable, which is great.
Yeah, big function coming up for that one in August.
Yeah, and it'll be televised live on Sky Thoroughbred Central. Now, in terms of jockey premierships, James McDonald, we know, won Sydney with Chris Waller. New South Wales, Brendan Abdullah, Chris Waller. New South Wales Provincial, Brendan Abdullah, Gerald Ryan. New South Wales Country, Greg Ryan and Paul Perry. No surprises there, Benz?
Paul Perry's had a really, really good season. They should be very proud.
Okay. Melbourne, Craig Williams, Darren Weir. Victoria, Dean Yandel, Darren Weir. And Dean Yandel, Darren Weir have won everything down there, really. Yeah. Brisbane, Jeff Lloyd, Tony Gollan. Queensland, James Orman, Tony Gollan. Queensland Provincial, James Orman, Stuart Kendrick. Adelaide, Jason Holder, Philip Stokes. South Australia, Jamie Carr, Philip Stokes. In Perth, Willie Pike, Adam Durant. WA, Willie Pike, also Adam Durant. In Hobart, David Perez and Scott Brunton, the same for Tasmania. ACT, Brendan Ward, Matthew Dale. And who do you think, which jockey, Benz, has won the most rides overall in the entire country?
In the entire country,